broken-hearted people.
Welcome in, everybody. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo live at 5 p.m. here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Forrest Hunt here alongside Ethan Estrada, and we have associate head men's basketball coach Scott Waterman back here with us today. And, you know, we're going to go over a little bit of your bracket, in which you did quite well, and I'm not really surprised. You and Soren last week talking about March Madness, and we're going to continue that conversation today, and we're glad that you're in here with us.
Well, as always, Forrest, Ethan, thanks for having me back, and more importantly, it's good that Forrest got over his little cold. I mean, he's not quite as tough as I thought you were, Forrest, to fight through, but hey, we'll give you the break, because you are the utility man. You do everything around here, so compliments to you on that, but we'll give you the pass on that one.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. And I went back after you told me that you threw a little shade last week. So I went back and listened to it, and I probably deserved it along the road somewhere.
Yeah, I think the bigger beef that I had was I showed up at the studio, and you were here, and then you just walked out. So I knew you were all right. At least if you had stayed in bed, I could have been like, oh, okay, Forrest is. But you were here, so I saw you, and I heard you talk. So I knew that laryngitis was probably like on a – you know, like a 2 or 3. You know, I know it was on the waning days, but...
Yeah. Well, it's better now.
Good.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Well, people may not like my voice.
Well, it's because it's opening day tomorrow. Oh, so that's why that's why it's got
to
be.
You know, and I'm hoping we get some time towards the end to talk about that, too, because I know you're very passionate about that as well.
Yes, no, let's do it.
So, it seems that your bracket fared pretty well. You know, we're just going to start up in that upper left-hand corner of your bracket in the eastern section of the tournament. Duke advancing and then UCF advancing. Now, did that game between those two teams scare you at all? Because I know it scared me and the rest of the world.
Watching it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought Duke was going to get beat. I mean, watching it, I picked them to win. But when UCF had the ball up 4, they got a ball in transition and were going down and had that nice little alley-oop that Dawkins missed. I thought, ooh. But then the one thing about Duke, and I give Coach K a lot of credit for, is he gets his guys. They have a winning mentality, and it didn't matter that they were down 4. They came back, made big plays. Reddish hit a 3. Then, obviously, Williamson with the drive and 1. Then Barrett with the putback off the free throw. I mean, it was just phenomenal, the winning mentality and the edge that they knew that they were going to win, even though they were down 4. And more importantly, The luck of March, when they go down, UCF goes down, has a great shot, misses. And I've seen a lot of tip-ins at the buzzer, and that one might as well have gone in. It was rolling around the rim that UCF had. Dawkins tipped it, and it was just waiting to fall in. And somehow the basketball gods kicked it off. So testament to Coach K, like he needs any more of those from me. But heck of a job getting them to advance and setting up their next matchup.
So we're going to continue with your picks here. You picked Virginia Tech over in that round of 32. What did you see in Virginia Tech to, in your judgment, advance them onto the Sweet 16?
You know, they have really good guard play, and they shoot the ball really well offensively. They're very efficient, and that was the big thing I saw. When you, look at that game against Liberty, we can backtrack against St. Louis. I saw them as a heavy favorite, which they ended up, taking care of business in that game. But Liberty did cause them some problems, slowing the game down a little bit, making it a little bit more of a tempo game. But for an underdog like that to do it for 40 minutes, 2 straight games, it's difficult. And just the better players wore down Liberty in the second half. Justin Robinson, Virginia Tech's guard who had been suspended, came off suspension and is playing like the pro that he is. So, that's one of the reasons why Blackshear, one of their shooters, is another really good player. So they've got some really good tools. And when they played Duke Friday night, about 3 weeks ago, Virginia Tech beat Duke. Now, big cloud over that game was Zion Williamson didn't play for Duke, but Robinson also didn't play for Virginia Tech. It was at Virginia Tech. It's going to be a good game. I think ultimately Duke just a little bit better in that one. I don't know if we're predicting Should I throw my two cents in already? I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, is your show. I'm sitting here talking.
I think we should do it. I was actually going to ask you that question next. You have Duke over Virginia Tech, but what can Virginia Tech do to advance to the Elite Eight? What do they have to do to beat Duke?
Yeah.
Even though you have Duke winning that game.
I think, you know, the big thing is going to be containing Zion Williamson. And Buzz Williams, the coach of Virginia Tech, if I were him, I would look into playing a lot of zone. Duke's not a great shooting team. And that's a way to neutralize Williamson. You have to do a great job blocking out, though, if you're in a zone. But that would be a way to really neutralize their power on the inside and make them, say, beat you on the outside. And if you watch Central Florida over the weekend when they played, that's what Central Florida did. They put Taco Fall, their big guy, on the inside, and Trey Jones, who isn't a great shooter, and they put him on Jones. And basically said, Jones, if you ever want to shoot, shoot. And he never did. And, you know, with a team like Virginia Tech, who's a little bit more athletic, they could give him some problems, especially if they do go to a zone.
Moving down, still in the eastern part of the bracket, we have Michigan State and LSU coming up in the Sweet 16. Something that you saw getting both of those teams to that point, and you had both those correct, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct, yeah. You know, Michigan State, you have a guy like Tom Izzo who just wills his team to win. They're so tough, so defensive-minded. Offensively, guys know their roles. And, you know, I just felt like from the beginning that they have a chance to make it all the way to the Elite Eight to face Duke. And they got their point guard, Cassius Winston, who's just long, athletic, and can get to the rim, make plays, and makes the players around him better, which is why he was a second-team All-American. In LSU, you know, they beat Yale in the first round. They got off to a big lead early, quick start. Second game, came down to the buzzer when they beat Maryland. Tremont Waters drive, little layup at the end. But their athleticism and the talent that they have, despite not having their coach right now, he's out for some NCAA issues, you know, athletically is just such a good thing for them. They have another guy, Naz Reid, big guy on the inside. So they can they have a versatile tools, but in looking at this Michigan State-LSU matchup, I think it becomes a tempo game. Tom Izzo slows it down. It's a, you know, a 58-62 type score. Michigan State just slows it down and just out, you know, Tom Izzo out coaches Tony Benford, the interim coach. Hard to pick against Izzo.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been a lot of controversy surrounding Izzo recently, and I'm sure you have an opinion on that. Whether you can speak about that or not, I'll leave that up to you. But with the controversy and his coaching style, a lot of people haven't been happy with lately.
Yeah, and for those of you who may not be aware, during the first round game, he got right up into a guy's face and yelled at him. And to be honest, you know, I know we're in the new school of coaching, supposedly, and kids are different these days. But I think that if you watch the reactions of the players, they deal with that every day. That's how he coaches them. Those guys love Tom Izzo. And if you noticed, there are two other players on the team that were trying to step in front of Izzo. And they just know that that's how he reacts. And the guy in on Tom Izzo's behalf, kid never came out of the game. They ran the play for him the next time out. So that just shows you what he is trying to get across. Now, maybe it wasn't the most, you know, when you're on national TV in an NCAA tournament game, of course it's going to get blown up versus if it's a January game where no one sees it. But, you know, I don't necessarily have a big problem with it.
Yeah.
That's because that's who he is.
Right. Either do I, just for the record.
Yeah.
So, you were pretty good on the left side of the bracket. As we go down to the west, you have Gonzaga and Florida State, both teams that are in the Sweet 16 and both teams that you had making it to the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Gonzaga, obviously the one seed, took care of business in their first two games rather easily. Florida State struggled a little bit against a Vermont team that got off to a hot shooting night, but ultimately Florida State's athleticism, size, and length just wore down Vermont. And in the second round, they had a great game against Ja Morant and Murray State. Good game for Florida State because they ended up winning by, I think, 28 or 29 points. But Ja Morant initially, who's going to be a top 3 to 5 pick in the draft, kept Murray State in it. But Florida State, again, what I like about them and why I have them advancing over Gonzaga in the next round is they have 10, 11 guys that can play 10 to 14 minutes a game. And their leading scorer comes off the bench. They've got some great shooters, and the guys have bought into their role. And Coach Hamilton, that's what he does. If you guys don't take care of what they're going to do, they've got someone that can come in and back him up and do just as good of a job. And that depth with their athleticism is something Gonzaga hasn't seen. And if you look at it, like we talked about last week with Soren, last year these two teams played same round, same region, Sweet 16, and Florida State won. And I just think, again, looking at things, not much is different for either team. And I just think Florida State's is a little bit better, a little bit tougher, a little bit more defensive-minded. And that's what allows them to advance over Gonzaga in one of the upset picks I have.
I don't want to backtrack too much, but you did have Marquette over Murray State. John Morant wasn't enough for you, huh?
No, I just Marquette had a guy, Marcus Howard, who was also one of the leading scorers in the nation.
Yeah.
But I think Marquette forgot how to play defense in that game, or read a scouting report on where John Morant was in that game.
Going back down, Texas Tech and Michigan again. You had them both right, and
yeah.
It seems like you might be the guy to go to in the coming years when we're talking about picking teams in the bracket. By the way, how many screens did you have going this year? Was it three or was it four this year?
It all depended. Sometimes three, sometimes four, depending on if I was at the office or I was at home. At home I get the TV, iPad, laptop, and then we have another iPad, so we break down all four. In the office, it's a little bit. We have two laptops and the TV, so three or four.
No matter where you are, it seems like you're in good hands when it comes to catching all the tournament games.
Yeah.
Texas Tech over Michigan. Tell us why.
I just think Texas Tech. First, Chris Beard, coach, done a great job because he lost four starters last year, and you return one guy, Jared Culver, who can really score. But you put in four, five, six new guys around him, and to get to this point in time, be one of the most efficient defensive teams in the nation, testament to him, and that's why he's won, some Coach of the Year awards already. But I just think it's going to be a slow-paced game. I don't know what, the over-under is in terms of total points in the game, but it's going to be a really low scoring. Take the under for those of you who are putting money on it. But I just think that their defense is going to wear down Michigan, Texas Tech advances to face Florida State.
And that'll be an interesting one. Now we know that you picked Duke to win the whole thing, so that left side of that bracket's pretty spoken for in that respect. We go to the South now.
Hold on for it.
Yeah.
Ethan, are you here? You have any thoughts?
Oh, hi. so far,
I feel like I'm just taking away all of Ethan's thunder if he has anything to say. He had his look in his eyes.
Oh, no, so. My bracket is totally messed up.
I didn't even fill one out.
No, I didn't. No, but I got Duke. LSU.
You got a shot.
I got Florida State and Michigan, Virginia, North Carolina, and Kentucky, so it's not that bad.
You like the average.
His school, unfortunately, he doesn't believe is going to make it to the national championship game.
What?
He didn't even pick his Jayhawks to go all the way.
No, I knew we were going to lose. That wasn't even close.
All right. I just wanted to make sure you were up over there. I wasn't putting you to sleep.
Virginia scared me. And I think at one point I was almost, rooting for the back-to-back number one seed upset just because they played pretty poorly in the first half of that game. But I know that would have messed up a lot of people's brackets, including yours. And you have them going all the way to the Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, we were talking about the Duke scare. And, what were your thoughts in that first round when it comes to Virginia?
Yeah, I think one thing that, people may not realize is that it's hard to win basketball games. It doesn't matter who you're playing. It could be Dominican versus Point Loma, and when Point Loma is number 10 team in the nation versus us, it's hard, for the team picked to win or the team that's thought to be better, because two teams go out, score starts 0-0. It's not like they're up 20-0 to start. So, you know, it becomes a grind. And you take a game like that where Gardner-Webb knows they're playing for – they know that they have nothing to lose. So they're going to go out there and play free. And Virginia Tech obviously – or Virginia, has all the muckety-muck of last year losing to the being the first 16 team – first team to lose to a 16 seed. And, you know, it just takes time. And eventually Virginia wore them down. And the better players came out on top. But, yeah, it's scary. But, you know, that's why they're, you know, Coach Bennett is, you know, thought of as a very good coach, and why the players that they have are there. They're ACC-level players. And Gardner-Webb is a good school in the Big South, but then it's not quite as good as the ACC. And eventually things even out.
Ethan, is that one of the upsets that you had in your bracket was Gardner-Webb over Virginia?
No, that was not. I made some stupid decisions in my bracket, and that's fine. I don't pride myself on my basketball prowess, so this is mostly just for fun to see how many I could get right.
You know what? You should try to do it where you do as many as you can to get wrong.
I should.
Because I bet you'd have more success, especially if you're a novice basketball guy.
I'm going to do that next year.
Because it's hard. It's hard to pick it that way with all the upsets and things. It would be really tough.
Yeah, next time I'm going to go against my gut.
That makes you wonder which one's harder, to pick a perfect bracket of losers or a perfect bracket of winners.
Losers, I think.
You think that one would be harder?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try it next year.
Because if any, like, high seed, which didn't happen this year, because we have all the ones, all the twos, all the threes, and two of the fours advancing, which is only the second time this has ever happened where as many high seeds like this has advanced. If you think about that, on every other given year, someone's getting upset. So that would be hard to pick that upset.
It would be. I agree. Now, Coach, you didn't have as much luck with the Wisconsin-Oregon game. Tell us why the Ducks were so successful in that game.
Well, I thought it was going to be a game of tempo. And Wisconsin can really slow things down and with their swing offense, get the ball inside to Ethan Happ. And Oregon did a great job, and I give them credit. Coach Altman, you know, was mixing up defenses. They play a very aggressive, up-tempo style. They're very athletic. And that actually took Wisconsin out of what they wanted to do and turned what should have been a close game into essentially a blowout.
Oregon was a 12 in that. You had the 5-4 matchup, and it ended up being the 12-13 with Oregon and UC Irvine. Now, that UC Irvine, would you say, is probably the biggest upset of the tournament? I think in a lot of people's eyes it was.
Yeah, no, they did. And the Anteaters from the Big West, not your traditional power team in that conference, but in the last few years they've really developed their program. They shot the ball really well. And the big guys inside really set the tone on the boards. Kansas State was playing without Dean Wade, their best player, which obviously doesn't help. But you give UCI credit. They didn't go in with the mentality that they were going to lose and instead came out with the fact that they should have been the higher seed, and that mindset took them over the top. And, you know, kudos to them. And Max Hazard hit a big three to kind of seal the game at the end.
Didn't have as much success on this side of the bracket. We saw that you had the whole left side of the bracket. It was perfect. When I say it, not as much success, I mean you have four of the 16 teams. So, you know, take that as you wish. You had the Villanova over St. Mary's and Purdue over Old Dominion. Were you worried about those picks at all?
No, I thought St. Mary's could give Villanova a game, which they did. It was tight, but Villanova's is so experienced. And they just have a little bit more athleticism, a little more experience playing against higher level teams. I thought that would push them through, which it did. And Purdue, again, Big Ten team that's playing really well right now, I thought would easily walk through. And it was a little bit tighter, like kind of like that Virginia game where at the beginning of the game, Old Dominion had some success. But again, size, athleticism, and guy by the name of Carson Edwards going for 42 points changed that.
You had Iowa over Cincinnati. You had Cincinnati over Iowa. and it ended up being the other way around, the 10 over the 7. Would you say that those 10-7, like 8-9 games might be the hardest to predict when you're filling out your bracket like
this?
They
really are, and especially when you got a game like Iowa versus Cincinnati where there's two contrasting styles, where you got Iowa wants to get up and go, play fast, and Cincinnati wants to slow it down and grind you and defend you. Those are really hard to pick because typically, and why I picked Cincinnati in that one was it becomes such a slow – they want to slow it down tournament situation, typically the slower-paced team gets the advantage. But it became a high-scoring game, went to overtime, and Iowa pulled it out, even though they were down big early.
You had Tennessee, the 2 over 15, Colgate. And at Tennessee, there was a lot of hype surrounding them this year. And then, you know, it seems like, at least to me, another novice basketball fan, that you haven't heard much about them in the tournament. And you know, not a lot of people are picking them to go to the national championship game. You have them in the Final Four. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, all it takes really is for an upset on the bottom side in the Midwest, UNC, and then Tennessee, you would think would become that favorite to take on Duke, who's the favorite on the other side in the national championship game. Now, you had them over Iowa, and then you have them going all the way to the Final Four. Is that just me? Am I not paying as close enough attention to the tournament, or is Tennessee really not getting that much of the hype of the tournament?
They definitely fall into the shadows of the Dukes, the Carolinas, the Virginias of the world, and that's probably a great thing for them. You know, it's really, you know, probably if we were in Knoxville or Memphis, it'd be a little different, but being especially out here where we're going to get a little bit less of the SEC bias, they're definitely under the radar team, but they've got three guys, Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, and Jordan Bone, who run that team, and they play an up-tempo, aggressive style. Those guys can score. They're all seniors, so they know the experience part. They can make plays, and you got to give them a great chance in these next two games this weekend.
You have them over Virginia. Tell us why.
Again, I think Virginia wants to control the tempo, and this kind of contradicts everything I just said. But I just like Tennessee, the pace that they're going to play at. And I think at the end of the day, they just have a little bit more skill in their perimeter players. Ty Jerome and DeAndre Hunter, who play for Virginia, who are both, you know, potential pros, are good. But I think Tennessee's got enough to neutralize them, can score inside, and can get out and run a little bit. Not like North Carolina, who Virginia always has a lot of success with, but enough to get the game going, and they're getting hit shots. And I think just a gut feeling could be 50-50 on that one, flip a coin, but I think Tennessee pulls it out.
You mentioned Virginia's success over a North Carolina school that has a lot of history in the basketball program, and Virginia a good one as well, especially recently. What is it about schools like that? You know, you're playing – It's like if you're talking college football and somebody has Alabama's number. You know, they beat everybody, but what is it about having a school's number, and have you had that feeling or that experience as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to, again, styles of play. Sometimes, you know, it's just easier to play against different teams when they do different things, or there's matchups that you can expose, or ways that they guard things. And there's also the psychological component as well. If you know you've beaten a team once or twice in a row, you can continue to use that. And yeah, and definitely throughout my time, there's been times where I felt like, all right, we may be down, but we're playing this team and we've had success and we come out and win, even though we're not supposed to technically on paper. So yes, there's definitely been times in my career where that's happened.
Moving down to the Midwest part of the bracket, you had North Carolina over Iona. That seemed like a, I'm sure almost 100% of the bracket, except for the Iona faithful, had UNC there. And then Washington over Utah State. You had Utah State. Again, that's that 8 and 9 seed that we were talking about having difficulty picking.
Yeah, and I would say that I picked Utah State just because the success they had at the end of the year, beating Nevada, beating San Diego State in the Mountain West title game. And Washington, you know, came from the Pac-12, where they, not a great conference, and they play a zone, and Utah State has a lot of shooters that can space the floor. So I thought that that would give Utah State just a little bit of an advantage. And to be honest, they didn't look like they knew what to do against the zone and how to attack it at all. So kudos to Coach Hopkins executing a great game plan and advancing there to face North Carolina, where they ran into a team they could execute against the zone. And it was close in the beginning, but again, the up-tempo style North Carolina plays, and they attacked the middle of the zone. They got Nasir Little in the middle. He was able to catch, turn, make plays, and really broke down the defense of Washington.
You had the next portion of the bracket perfect up until this point, Auburn over New Mexico, and then the other Kansas school, University of Kansas, had a little more success over Northeastern.
Yes.
And then you had Auburn advancing it and beating Kansas to face North Carolina, which is where we stand right now.
Yeah, and I thought Auburn would advance this because they shoot the ball so well. Ethan's Kansas squad, they've had so much adversity this year with guys being hurt, suspended, leaving the team, and it's just hard to overcome that eventually. And Auburn was playing well. They just won the SEC tournament. Kansas lost in the championship game of the Big 12. And but the way Auburn shot the ball and how Coach Pearl gets his guys up for games, I just felt that they would win, and they definitely took care of that one and advanced to face North Carolina, which is going to be a game that if you like up and down, they're going to be up and down, both teams. I was hearing one of the pundits say, I don't need to work out that day. Just watching that game will be my workout with how they run up and down the floor. So it's going to be exciting, but one thing is that when two teams who play similar styles, the team with the better player wins, and I think North Carolina's just got a little bit better players, and they'll advance on.
Ethan, anything on your Jayhawk squad as the season has come to a close?
I picked us to beat Auburn, but of course that wasn't the case. But yeah, I've watched a couple of Kansas games this season, and every single time that I watch them, it comes down to the wire because they don't have the entire team, a lot of injuries, and yeah. Either way, that was disappointing.
Yeah, and you know what the sad thing is? They talk about this being a bad year for Kansas, and they still got to the second round of the NCAA tournament, and they finished third in the conference. But again, this shows you the expectations and the history of that program, of how deep and deeply rooted it is with championships and success.
Bottom part of this Midwest bracket, Iowa State being upset by Ohio State, and that was kind of the big damper in this bottom portion of your bracket. Really, you had them moving on to face Kentucky, and then it's one of those things. Upsets happen.
Yeah, I thought Iowa State, watching them in the Big 12 championship game against Kansas, they looked really good. They've kind of been an up-and-down team all year. They got off to a great start, then hit some adversity. He went down the hill, then really got back up towards the end, and I thought they were just playing really well. I thought their chemistry was good, but great job by Coach Holtman getting his guys prepared, made it a lower-scoring game, and Ohio State advanced. But Houston, I'll jump ahead, who they're going to play, played really well against Georgia State, and they've had a phenomenal year. The American Conference doesn't get the credit that it deserves. And Houston, you got to remember, last year was a half-court heave away from going to the Sweet 16. Michigan hit. So they're a really good team, they advanced on as well.
Yeah, and they will face a Kentucky team that you picked to play against North Carolina, but that's back up there. Wofford against Seton Hall. Now, you had Seton Hall, and this is actually the only game prior to any of the games happening that I looked at. My boss asked, hey, somebody wants to make a bet, and we're not promoting betting on the show, of course, but
it's an NCAA violation.
Yeah, we're not promoting that at all. And he goes, if you were to take Wofford to Seton Hall, who would you take? And I didn't know the seating. I didn't know anything. And I go, I had the same pick as you did, Seton Hall. We were both wrong.
Yeah.
I might get fired.
Hope not.
Oh, I hope not, too.
If you do, let me know. I'll get you back.
Okay.
Not that I have any clout around here, but I'll try. I thought, Wofford really shot the ball well. They have Fletcher McGee, who's the all-time leading three-point shooter in Division I history. And they execute well. But I thought Seton Hall, being in the Big East, losing in the Big East championship game, and again, one of the things I always talk about is that you notice, like, the hot team, who's playing well. and they had beat Kentucky earlier in the year, and I don't watch a lot of Big East basketball, to be perfectly honest, but when I had watched them, I just thought that their athleticism could take Wofford out of what they do, but kudos to Wofford on executing, making big shots throughout the game and pulling that out. And heck, against Kentucky, that was a really tough game for Kentucky, and Fletcher McGee, the all-time leading three-point shooter, goes 0 for 12. Now, again, if he makes one or two of those shots in a four-point game, which the final score ended up being, we have a whole different ball game here. So, again, Wofford, they execute so well. They shoot the ball so well and control the tempo of that game, and Kentucky was on their heels.
In the Terriers, I believe, Wofford.
Terriers.
That's the first Terrier I've seen. You have Kentucky playing North Carolina, and, you know, when you're talking about historically Kentucky, you might even think about taking them over North Carolina, but like you said, the way they played against Wofford, it's, you know, with the UNC pick being in your Final Four, that's who I would take.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things for Kentucky is that PJ Washington, their best player, who's a lottery pick right now, is in a cast. They're not 50-50. He's going to play Friday night. He didn't play last weekend. He sprained it in the SEC title game. They say it's a sprain, but why are you in a cast if it's a sprain? I don't know. I'm not a doctor, even though I stay at a Holiday Inn sometimes. but I would have to say that, you know, for the most part, North Carolina just has a little bit more depth, and if PJ Washington doesn't play, they move on to Minneapolis.
Your Final Four, Duke, Texas Tech, Tennessee, North Carolina. Is that similar to what you have over there, Ethan?
I have Duke, Florida State. I had Villanova, but they ruined everything in North Carolina.
Fairly similar.
Yeah.
Now, 14 of the Sweet 16 teams, Coach, you have, and, you know, barring anything, you know, drastic happening in the next week or so, I would say you fared pretty well.
Yeah, you know, it was a decent year. I had some dicey first-round picks, I'll say. The second round got me to bounce back. But yeah, some of those upsets, you know, you just never know. And when you get two teams that play similar styles, and I can sit there and overanalyze as good as anybody. So it is what it is.
Yeah,
you know, and the funny thing is, I'll start watching a game, and I may have picked Duke, and all of a sudden I'm cheering for Central Florida to win, or I want them to win. So
yeah.
You just, you know, I might as well just take it and rip it up. So.
And have you ever seen a guy move like Taco Fall did at 7'6"? I mean, you've been around the game a while. You think of guys like Manute Bol.
Uh-huh.
I knew nothing about him, to tell you the honest truth. I thought this guy's 7'6", going against Zion Williamson. I'm watching this game.
Yeah.
That was my incentive to watch the game.
CBS did a good job of getting you to do that.
Then. Yeah, they did. They did. And I was thinking, you know, this guy doesn't want to go to the NBA. He wants to be an engineer.
Yeah.
You know, I know that now. And I was thinking, there's no way this guy's going to play the whole game. And it seemed like if he didn't get into the foul trouble that he was in, he probably would have played at least 35, 36 minutes of that game.
Yeah.
And you know, when you think about guys that are that big, a lot of times they have problems moving up and down the floor, not necessarily with athleticism, but just the fact that you're so big. A lot of times, you know, health problems and things like that surface later on in life. And he really surprised me.
Yeah,
to tell you the truth.
I would say, and I've seen, you know, a few guys of that size during that time, and he probably is the most agile, especially for the physique that he has. I've seen some guys that are 7'4", 7'5", but they're skinny, and they can move a little bit better. But, no, I agree. He's definitely very agile, and you could tell he's really got his head on his shoulders with, you know, wanting to be an engineer and just how he comes across in the media.
Yeah, and I had that same feeling that you just mentioned with, you know, you pick Duke to win, or you want Duke to win, and then you realize how, you know, the way that the game's going, and then you find yourself on the couch going, well, you know what, I don't really care who wins this game. You know, by the way, I really hope that your wife likes basketball.
Oh, yeah, definitely she does. I think she has so I do like one bracket, and that's like it. Like, we have like, she has like one for every different thought process that she has or pool that she has. So we have all sorts of different picks. And yes, she does like basketball, and so do my parents and my in-laws, and it's basketball is life.
Well, I figured, you know, at least she had to a little bit due to your job.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could just see at home if she, you know, put up with it because of your job. But then, you know, March Madness comes around, you have every TV on in every room of the house has the game. You know, I think she may get a little. But that's great that she does it. So
yeah, well, don't worry. There's sacrifices after the basketball
season. I'm sure.
You guys will learn one day.
I'm sure there are. And it's funny that you mentioned after the basketball season. I know that you said that you were, you know, pressed with time. How are you looking?
No, we got a few more minutes.
Okay. And after the basketball season, which for me starts tomorrow. For you, it doesn't start until when's the national championship game? I don't even
Monday
know.
Monday the 8th, I believe.
So after Monday the 8th, for you, it switches. You're a big baseball guy.
Yes.
First of all, the best player, in my opinion, to ever play the game just signed the largest contract ever, and he has the highest average annual value, and that's your boy down in Orange County, Mr. Mike Trout. And you being a big Angels fan, you know, just your initial thoughts when you heard that came out, that he wants to be an Angel for life.
Couldn't believe it.
Really?
Couldn't believe it on several fronts. A, because the Angels have never been really known to be ponying up the money to get those big free agents or sign guys to big contracts or long-term contracts. So, yes, I was shocked when I saw it. And I came in, and after we practiced at 6:45 in the morning, and I came in and had a message that Mike Trout had signed. I was like, are you kidding me? And then I saw 12 years, $436 million, and I think I nearly fell out of my chair when I saw that, knowing that they had actually put that in, and then hearing that he actually took less money so they can get some more pieces around him. So that was really exciting to hear. And it would be, you know, for a guy like him who's had so much success and could have had his choice of the Yankees, going back to Philadelphia, being close to home. You know, it's a testament to his character that he was decided to stay around. And, heck, they probably have a clause in his contract. It's going to be the Mike Trout Stadium of Anaheim or something. But, hey, I'll take it to keep him there. And now we need Arte Moreno to go out and get us a few more pitchers and maybe another bat when Pujols retires here in the next few years, and we can get Mike Trout some playoff wins, not just three playoff games in his career.
And, Ethan, you probably along the same lines as my thinking here, I thought Derek Jeter may have been the last lifer.
Yeah, I thought so too. But now all these extensions – this is definitely the year of the extension because everybody's signing an extension. I think we're going to have a couple more along the way. And especially now, I think Clayton Kershaw retires soon. I think in the next 2 or 3 years because he's just way too injury prone. So that would set him up to be a lifer. Mike Trout definitely is going to be a lifer. So I don't know. The way that baseball was in the early 2000s and the mid-2000s was a lot of shifting pieces, a lot of people going a lot of different directions. Of course, Derek Jeter staying in New York seemed impossible. Chipper Jones staying in Atlanta after he won the World Series his rookie year and not getting back since. That's a lot of commitment. So, I don't know. We'll see how it pans out with guys like Alex Bregman and Jacob deGrom who just signed those big extensions. But as it looks like, and Mike Trout might be the last one.
I'm really excited for that. Of course, the other side of the freeway up in Hollywood is where my faith lies when we're talking about things like that. But definitely don't dislike the Angels at all. And I'm if I had to pick an American League team, it'd probably be them.
Yeah.
And I was really excited to hear that Mike Trout was going to stay there for life, especially with the success that he's had. And I think it's really good for the game as well. You know, with the episode that we had with Bryce Harper and all that drama, I was glad that it seemed like Mike Trout said, hey, we're talking about an extension. I don't really know all the details, this and that. And less than a couple of weeks later, you know, it seemed like the first offer they put out there, he's like, sure, I'll take it. And like they said, in comparison to Harper, what are they going to sign Trout for? You know, $700 million, $1 billion. I mean, it was that much better, I think. And it was cool to see. And granted, like you said, he took less money, so that way they can go get other guys. We can all agree, I think, that he could have taken way more money and gotten way more money. But I really, like you said, a testament to his character. And I think it's good for the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, and this is probably a little bit before your guys' time, or you guys may recollect, but when Alex Rodriguez signed 10 years, $250 million, I think it was with Seattle, with Texas, and then it got shifted over to the Yankees, and the Yankees re-signed him for another 5 years at some ridiculous amount of money. It goes to show the value that these teams put on these top prospects or top free agents or all-stars or whatever you want to refer to them as. And it goes to show the value as a society that we place on athletics as well. And that's one of the great things and why baseball will always be America's pastime. And I know the NFL is really pushing it because of the popularity that, you know, it's only 16 weeks and the Super Bowl and all that. But I think that's one special thing about baseball is that you do have guys that, you know, understand the commitment of 162 games. And yes, there's free agency. And yes, they are looking for money and the numbers are really big. But I think on this side, baseball more so than other sports is more of the homegrown with the minor leagues and developing guys, you know, mantra.
Do you see a wild card spot for the Angels this year? I think it's, you know, barring anything drastic, the Astros will probably take the division again.
Yeah.
Can the A's replicate 98 wins, 97 wins? I don't really know. They're saying there may be three teams out of the AL East. We know there's only one in the Central.
Yeah.
The Indians are, and then it's a bunch of nothing. So, do you see that team, fighting for the spot?
I think that, you know, the one thing that, or there's two things I see. First of all, I still think they're another relief pitcher away from really giving themselves a shot. I think offensively they can be fine, but the lack of the not having Shohei Ohtani in the rotation. I thought, you know, when he went had his Tommy John surgery, he was pitching really well before that happened. Yes, we'll have his bat in the lineup, but I think we're just one other starting pitcher away from having that chance. Do I think they'll be in the wild card race all the way through? Yes. Also, new manager, new voice could be some exciting things. I mean, I love Mike Socha, but 19 years, and I guess his voice got a little stale in the locker room. And heck of a run, though. You got a World Series 2002 and had a lot of success, got to the playoffs 3-4 times. So it'll be interesting to see how Brad Ausmus is, and I hear he's a much more analytics-based coach versus Socha. So, you know, it's a great times in Angel Land, and hopefully, you know, this season, regardless of what happens, we're in the wild card or we're in it throughout the year. It's just a nice launching pad to the future.
Yeah, I like Brad Ausmus. I thought that was a good signing or a good sign for a manager. But I think he'll be there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe 19 like Socha is. You talk about bullpen. Ethan's, you know, has a perfect guy in mind for you guys to sign. Down the stretch, maybe he doesn't. I was trying to give him a little, you know, little bite there. Craig Kimbrell would be a guy that I think.
Well, I get anybody can use. It's one of those situations where anybody would be happy to have Craig Kimbrell, but it's who really needs him.
I think the Angels fall under that category. Who needs him? You know, yeah. You give him 5 or 6 years, like you said. You know, maybe not a wild card spot this year, but fighting for it definitely. They have a couple of young guys too in that farm system, arms that can be starters that can be pretty good. I think Craig Kimbrell, if it were me, that's who I'd be looking at. You know, you tell him, we might not win this year, or we're going to win this year. We might not get into the playoffs this year, but you do have Mike Trout.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't want to play with Mike Trout? Any team that has Mike Trout has an opportunity to at least fight for a postseason spot, maybe even Baltimore. Maybe. That's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, that's a bit much. Baltimore's pretty bad.
I think Kimbrell's a guy that I think they should go after.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, why not?
I don't know. All I know is that's all I'm doing tomorrow is
yes.
ESPN triple header. I know your Dodgers, 1 o'clock ESPN.
Yeah, 1:10. They'll be on ESPN, though I don't know if I'm going to watch the ESPN feed. I might watch the MLB at bat feed.
Got it. Is that Charlie Steiner these days? Is doing it?
Charlie Steiner, Rick Mundy will be on the radio. Joe Davis, Oral Hershiser, Alana Rizzo on TV. So
yeah, so you'll like this one. And this is being a Dodgers fan. 1988, you weren't even a thought yet in the world.
That was 10 years before I was born,
yes.
Scott.
Yes, exactly. So you weren't even being thought of. I was at the Kirk Gibson 88 World Series.
You were there.
I was there. My dad and I went.
You must have been a young lad then as well.
I was 8.
Okay. And you remember it.
I do.
That's great.
I remember because we.
That's awesome.
When the A's were up, whatever it was, 4-2 or whatever, before Gibson came up, we started to walk out. And when we came back in to watch Gibson hit the home run, And Jose Canseco's grand slam in the first inning flew right over my head. We were sitting in left field pavilion.
That's a story. That is a great story. I was at game one in 2017. Not as, I mean, they won, but not as memorable of a game, of course. But, yeah, what a story. That's a cool story. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I don't think you've ever told me that story.
There you go.
You've told me a lot, but never that one.
There you go. Maybe you can take me to lunch in Calarega someday, and we can talk some more.
That sounds good to me. I'll buy you lunch. How about that?
There we go.
We can go somewhere else, though. It's your choice.
If we go somewhere else, I'll pay. How about that?
Yeah, we don't have to do that. Are you good on time?
A couple more minutes.
Okay, a couple more. You just let me know. You give me the – well, we'll probably go to 53. Can you stay to 53?
I can stay to 53.
Okay, 53. The AL East is pretty interesting.
Yes. Mm. Yankees, Red Sox, Blue Jays, all kind of in competition right there for those top three spots.
And the Rays.
Oh, the Rays, I forgot. Yes, the Rays are the trendy wild card pick, second wild card pick.
You know, they're predicting the Yankees in the East – even over the World Series champs, the Red Sox, you know, I don't know. I like the Rays. I like their pitching staff. You know, Blake Snell, do they have as many pieces? I don't think so. You know, your thoughts on that American League East division?
You know, I think, you know, obviously you pencil either the Yankees or Red Sox to win the division. One of them is the wild card. I just think they're that much better than everybody else in that division. And that's why I think, like, the Rays, Blue Jays, Angels are all in competition for that second wild card spot. But I think you take the Red Sox and Yankees just head and shoulders above everybody else. But I think it's going to be really interesting. And I have a friend who's a Red Sox fan, and he drives me crazy because I have to.
I have one that's a Red Sox fan. He drives me crazy. That's a coincidence.
talking about the Red Sox. He's one of my best friends. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens to him after this year. Because they've got guys that are free agents, maybe potential retirements. It's getting up there in age. So it's going to be really interesting to see the trend that they go on the next 2-3 years. If they're going to be able to keep this, if Henry, their owner, is going to be able to keep signing guys. So it'll be really interesting. And then obviously when you have that Yankees versus Red Sox rivalry year after year after year, how that all pans out to see who does get that most likely top seed, or with the Astros, they're one of those top seed. So it's going to be really interesting to for those two to go at it. And obviously you got the power hitters in New York with Stanton and
Judge.
Aaron Judge. There we go. Fresno. That's where he's from. And then
Bulldogs.
The Red Sox with Betts and Benintendi and those guys. So it's going to be really interesting. It'll be a fun race for those fans if you're on one of those teams.
I think what gives the Red Sox the edge is that the Yankees are going to be without Luis Severino till May. And that could hurt them in April and early May for the most part. So that could give the Red Sox that boost that they need at the beginning of the season to make sure that they have that one or two game separation by the time October rolls around. So I didn't make a formal pick when we were going through all our division picks, but I think now I'm leaning more towards the Red Sox now that injury has come to light. Mm. Because their pitching rotation is still really solid, but you need that guy at the top of the rotation who can lead the way, and Severino is definitely that guy for the Yankees.
Yeah,
it's interesting because I'm sticking with my original pick, which was the Yankees, due to the fact of the way that the game's going nowadays, where you only need to get to your starter through the fifth or sixth inning, and the Yankees have five or six guys that come out of the bullpen and can just shut down a game. And I think bullpenning has become more of a thing. I don't know about the opener per se, that idea, but I think that the bullpen, when you're talking about pitching staff as a whole, the Red Sox definitely have the better rotation top to bottom. But I think bullpen might be where they – not where they win games, but where they keep from losing games, if that makes sense, down the stretch.
Okay, and I want to ask you guys, most overrated, underrated team in baseball? I think I'll go first since I asked the question. Overrated, Atlanta Braves. I'm not impressed by them at all. Their offense has a couple of good pieces with Freddie Freeman and Acuna Jr., but for the most part – I think their team's okay. And underrated, St. Louis Cardinals. They were my pick to win the Central. I think they have all the pieces necessary to make a very deep run.
Overrated, Milwaukee Brewers. I think they're the third best team in that division. I think the Cubs win that division. Now, I think the Cardinals are my initial pick. I think the Cardinals come in second in that division but do get a wild card spot, I'm sticking with Atlanta in the East for me, and Cardinals, Phillies, NL wild card. But for me, most overrated, it will be the Milwaukee Brewers. I don't know if they're going to really replicate what they did last year. Yeah, I know they have the MVP, Christian Yelich, all that. I don't know. They didn't really impress me. They didn't impress me. And then underrated, I'm stuck between now, I think the Angels are pretty underrated. I do think they're underrated. I think they have young arms, like you said, Scott. They don't have the rotation that the rest of the American League does, like the Red Sox, like the Astros, like Houston. But I do think that, like you said, they're pretty advanced when we're talking offensively. They're very good, an offensive team. Of course, when you have Mike Trout, Albert Pujols on a team hitting, you know, back-to-back. And then, of course, Shohei Ohtani, who's going to be hit this year, and he's healthy. He can't throw, but he's healthy. Yeah. So, you know, the elbow may have been nagging him. Of course, it nags him when he swings. I know the feeling. but, you know, having that healthy elbow, and he hit very well last year, I think he's just going to hit it even better. So, although pitching is very valuable, I think that the overall offense of the Angels keeps them in it, like you said, fighting till the end. And I think they're pretty underrated as a club. I think they finished second above the A's. So
yeah, I would agree with that. And see, now I think Ethan's getting me back for me being the. And again, I know some baseball, but I'm not like you guys here. So I think he's getting me back for when I picked on him about his bracket picks over here. Again, I'm going to throw – again, I haven't done as much homework on this baseball season because I'm more stuck in my basketball world, but I'll start watching here. But I think the most overrated team is the Cubs. I think that they've I don't remember how they finished out last year, but it wasn't what they were supposed to do. I think – they lost in the wild card game, yeah, first round. And that was not what was expected of them. And just another year, and I know – Joe Maddon's getting as much as I loved him when he was an Angel, and has done a phenomenal job in Tampa and now in Chicago, unrightfully let go in Tampa, in my opinion. But I think that the Magic's just kind of run out there, getting up in age, and all because you said the Angels are underrated, I'll agree with you. So I'll take the Angels.
Those picks were better than my basketball picks.
But
I watch a lot of SportsCenter. Baseball Tonight with Carl Ravitch.
Thinking about it too, I think you gotta have to look at the NL West with the Rockies and the Padres. I think the Rockies could be underrated strictly because of the ballpark that they play in, inflating, of course. But a lot of people don't give them the credit that they deserve, especially after what they did last year, and maybe not this year, but with Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr. I have the Padres finishing third above. I have it going Dodgers, Rockies, Padres, Diamondbacks, Giants will be a coin flip for fourth and fifth. I think so. It might be bold to have the Padres finishing third, but I think that they're not underrated, but on their way. So,
yeah, completely agree. The Padres are definitely that team that everybody's going to have their eye on coming to the future because of how deep their farm system is, because of all the top prospects that they're going to have playing for their team this year. So give those guys a little bit more experience. Their rotation is not scary, but it is good enough to win games. So I think they finished third.
Yeah, Scott, we have you on here pretty often. I don't know if you've ever done the rapid fire questions with you. Have we ever done that?
No, we have not. I feel cheated.
We have not done that. Okay, so I have a few in my head right now for you since we only have a few minutes left. I know I told you 53.
That's fine.
We're about that. So right now, favorite ice cream and topping?
Well, geez, you asked me the thing I don't eat. I don't really eat ice cream. So you're talking about the most boring person in the world. But if I had to say...
Well, I can ask you an alternative to that.
All right.
So, no ice cream, but your favorite when you have to have something sweet, what's your go-to then?
It would be Cheesecake Factory cheesecake.
Right down here in.
Right down here in Corte Madera.
Now, what do you get the same cheesecake, or what's your favorite to get?
I don't know. It all depends.
Just a cheesecake guy in general.
Yeah.
Okay.
It all depends on the mood.
If you weren't a basketball coach, what would you do?
I
would
have been a doctor. I was on that path. Yep.
Through school?
Yep.
I did not know that about you either.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of doctor? Just a family practice?
No, sports medicine.
Okay. Kinesiology, maybe?
I was definitely a kinesiology major, and then I went and got my master's in exercise physiology, and I was going to go to med school, but paths diverged.
No, I know you're a pretty healthy guy. You get up at 4:30 in the morning and run 5 miles. I think that's what
Coach... Yeah, some, Don't listen to Coach Booker.
No, it's okay. But so you don't get up at 4:30 and run.
Probably earlier, but.
But I know you're a pretty healthy guy in that regard. Yeah. So when you are having your cheat day, what's your cheat meal?
Oh, jeez, cheat day. Who's this guy?
And it can't be cheesecake.
No, it won't be cheesecake. I don't know, Forrest. My wife's killing me right now. I'm getting all these texts.
Is she telling you what you should say?
She kind of is.
So what is your cheat day via?
We will say, I don't even know.
Okay. No cheat day for
Coach Waterman.
Yeah,
very few cheat days.
Only salads.
I need a great day to have a cheat day, and I haven't had a...
Only salads and dried fruit
and
vegetables.
There you go.
Water.
A lot of salad. There you go. That's healthy diet.
If there were a movie about your life, who would play you?
You.
Me? I'm not even close to being a good basketball coach.
Well, sometimes I'm not either. That's jokingly. We'll go Matthew McConaughey. I've seen him coach on the he sits on the sideline of the Texas games.
That's a nice
pick. I don't have any facial hair to look as good as him, but he would be the choice.
Oh, I don't have any. Okay, you asked all the good ones.
I try to ask the good ones. Well, now you've been a part of our little questionnaire that we do with all of our guests. I think it only took...
It took 2 years almost for us.
Yeah,
I
think it's a dozen shows, I think.
And you caught me off guard. Otherwise, I would have some better answers for you. So good work on that.
Well, that's a good thing. Cheesecake, no cheat day, salads only, and Matthew McConaughey were the answers. Thanks, Coach, for coming on again.
No problem, Forrest. We'll have enjoy the games tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. More importantly, Forrest, ESPN baseball tripleheader. We'll be fired up for baseball.
Yeah, I'm going to watch some baseball tomorrow. Make sure that you at home watch baseball as well. We'll be back on the air next week at 5 o'clock, hot in the igloo right here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu.